you are physically going to experience a bottleneck. And we see that all too often. Again, that's the problem. It's not a marketing problem. It's usually a process problem. We see that so often.
Welcome to this episode of the Marketing Development Podcast. My name is Pete Everett, and today I am joined by Michael Killen. We talk about funnels, we talk about his book, but most of all, we talk about finding a purpose that is bigger than yourself. Strap in, guys. This is a really great episode. Welcome to this episode of the Marketing Development Podcast, and I am joined today by a friend of mine who I've never met in real life, Mr. Mike Killen. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, Pete. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you, mate. Mike runs a company called Sell Your Service, and he, well, we're actually going to be sharing a stage together at Agency Transformation Live in a few weeks' time. So we sort of mix in the same circles, and here we are on a podcast. So do you want to just sort of give a bit of a rundown about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, I run Sell Your Service, which is basically a coaching program for marketing funnel builders predominantly, but essentially sales training. I help people attract and land five-figure, six-figure deals, you know, through our coaching and our courses and a little bit of consultancy work as well. And the reason I started that is because I had a web design business that kind of did okay. And then I only worked on marketing funnels and became hyper-specific about what it is that I was selling. And it's funny, I ended up just selling basically blog post opt-in forms. I didn't even actually end up building them. We just sold the concept and the strategy behind it. And that specificity allowed me to, you know, create a six, almost seven figure business, which I sold a few years back. I was like, well, what do I want to do now? So I basically just kind of record a lot of YouTube videos teaching people how to do what I did, you know, which is kind of building a five figure and six figure projects and business.
So I do have to say, firstly, good use of the word specificity.
Thank you very much. I get bullied for using that word, but I remember hearing it in Inception and thinking, no, it is a real word then, yeah.
Yeah, no, good use of it. I really, really enjoyed that. But also, go and check out Mike's YouTube channel. There'll be a link in the show notes, and whatever number episode it is, there'll be a link in the intro and outro to the show notes. So there'll be a link in there. Just go and check out his stuff, because it is very focused, but it's really quite entertaining. but yeah, you certainly drive the points home, which is great.
Good, yeah, and you know, I've been where a lot of marketing professionals have been and digital creatives or whatever people want to call themselves. And I know what it's like to want to struggle with, I think it's kind of something we're going to be talking about. Like, what is your purpose within like the business community and the wider world down to, well, how do you price consultancy? Like, how do you price a half day workshop? Yeah. And that's kind of all I want to, you know, help people with and teach people about.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. So let's there's a few things that we'll talk about with funnels and whatever, and we'll pick those up in a bit. But yeah, just picking up on that big picture thing. So you've got this sort of crazy global domination vision of something you want to influence in the world. So do you want to tell us about that, and then we'll sort of unpack that a little bit and how you got there.
I mean, this is my manifesto before I, you know, go insane and sort of, you know, launch myself into space kind of thing. That so basically what my big purpose is, I believe, and my big goal kind of throughout my lifetime is to get sales training in particular, but business and entrepreneurship, some marketing, you know, but sales training predominantly into school curriculums. I want to get sales training into the hands of every child and school in the world, ranging from ages. And we've already started doing it with, you know, primary school age, which I think they call elementary school in other places, down up all the way up to kind of college, university, master's degrees. You know, we've already got a range of kids learning some of this stuff. And the way that I view it is a bit like sex education was 20 years ago. It was very taboo. It wasn't something that should really be talked about in schools, but now is considered not only necessary, but actually healthy for a society to grow and function. And if you look at the way people are setting up businesses and how people are getting jobs and how people are working, we value the creative side and the doing side and, you know, all of the engineering stuff. And that's fantastic. That's great, because we need that. But the cold hard truth is that you could build the world's best widget, but if no one buys it and if no one agrees with your point of view, And if you're not willing to serve an audience, which is really what I believe sales is about, finding a group of people or an audience of people that you want to serve better than anyone, that to me is vastly missing and underutilized within a lot of schools and education. And I think that people who can sell are confident, and confident people tend not to make stupid decisions or take risks. So that's my big goal kind of over the next, I don't know, 20 years maybe. So I'll call back in a couple of months and see if I'm still as passionate about it, because I'm sure I'll hate it by then.
Well, I mean, it's certainly no mean feat that you're setting yourself there.
No.
And, you know, I did a podcast, there's an episode, probably about 10, 15 episodes ago now, with a guy called JP Quinn.
Yeah.
And he's a local guy to me, he's in Sheffield, but he's decided to sort of take on this educational twist on entrepreneurship by creating board games.
Yeah.
So he, you know, these educational board games, and he's trying to make contact with schools and this, that, and the other in order to go and introduce them to kids of varying ages and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I seriously admire your ambition. I mean, taking it, you're not just saying, oh, I'd like to introduce this in the UK, or I'd like to introduce this in my local area. You're saying, right, there's a global need for this.
Yeah. Well, I mean...
Sorry, go on.
No, you go.
I was just going to say, I suppose the way that we've actually connected with each other is kind of an indication of how this global market is going.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm lucky enough that my customers literally come from all over the globe. And what's interesting is it's not just we have people from America, Australia, Malaysia, Thailand, you know, the UAE, England, all these different places. But we also have different people from different countries living in different countries. We've got a lot of English people living in the Middle East and Australia. We've got a lot of Australians and Americans living in Asia. And this mix has really shown me that the way out of poverty for so many countries, Africa, India, Brazil, all of these countries, is through them creating entrepreneurial endeavors, which is, you know, fantastic. That's the way to build yourself out of poverty as a nation, not to rely on governments, not to rely on handouts, but to build yourself out of poverty. And the way that you do that is by being confident that what you're selling is worth selling and knowing how to sell. And it's really bizarre to me, because we kind of teach this stuff to, you know, it took a long time for anyone over the age of 40 to take me seriously, but through, you know, years of content, years of documentation, books, podcasts, YouTube content, I've now got a little bit behind me to say, okay, I understand I'm only, whatever it is, 31 or 30 when I was giving these kind of talks. I want to teach you how to sell, how to close. And a lot of these people were salespeople and they thought they already knew it. And the same thing that came up again and again and again and again, particularly around money, particularly around sales, was why didn't they teach me this at school? And you look at it and people don't, you're not taught that. You're not taught what tax is. You're not taught how to handle money. You know, your colleague who you interviewed who wants to get board games introduced, there's a game by Robert Kiyosaki who wrote Rich Dad Poor Dad called Cash Flow. Now, whatever you think of him and, you know, the Rich Dad Poor Dad empire, that board game was designed for families and for people who had never really thought about money or financial education to understand how money really works. The reality is the education stage as kids is how you begin to kind of make these massive global changes. And I just kind of think, well, why not start at the source in the same way that we talk about diet now with schools, when 10 years ago that certainly wasn't a thing. So yeah, it's just interesting to me how people often say to me, I wish I had been taught this earlier.
Absolutely. And, you know, we focus so much on, well, certainly in the UK curriculum, that's all.
Yep.
That's the only one I can really resonate with, having kids in school.
Sure.
But we still focus on the very top level topics when you're looking at primary schools.
Yep.
And then when you get into secondary schools, you start picking your options, then
yep.
You're still into the broad things like engineering or
yep.
physics or science. And I'm not saying there's no need for
absolutely.
Those things.
Sure.
But you know, I did religious studies at,
yep.
at college, and I went and did a degree in biblical studies. But
did
I'm
you
not,
really?
Yeah.
How fascinating.
But I've not, you know, that... It was great. I had a great time and I
yeah.
met some great friends and had the uni experience, but I don't use that in my day to day.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
you know, having it's those kind of skills. Let's face it, how many times you would have been taught Pythagoras' theorem when you were at school? How many times a week do you use that?
It's every day, Pete. I'm constantly looking at two fields at right angles to each other, and I need to work out the surface area of the third field. It's like every day. But no, you're absolutely right. And the funny thing is that I remember asking, I remember going to a bank, this is a long time ago when I opened up an account, I must have been about 16, maybe even younger, and they said, oh, well, you need to write out a check, which probably explains how long ago it was, and I was like, how the hell do you write a check? And I remember the bank cashier explicitly rolling their eyes and going, ugh, what do they teach you kids at school? I'm like, well, don't blame me. I can tell you that the mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell, but you're right, I can't tell you some of these skills. Yeah. And again, there's a lot based around, and there's nothing, it's nothing against academia and people who want to be academic. We need that within society. It's the sign of a great society where we can put results behind and resources behind people thinking of these bigger things. But intelligence, the single measure of intelligence is often seen as academia, and it's just not true. You know, the single level of success. And I think a lot of people get into marketing because ultimately they want to help people and they like seeing people get results. That's the number one thing in our surveys we see. Why do you do this at all? It's because they like to help people and they like to see people get results. Well, that's not measured at any point in human life. Do we say, would you deem yourself successful by the amount that you help other people? It's not even on the radar. And yet that to me seems like an incredibly valuable thing that we should start viewing and we should start kind of promoting to our kids.
Yeah, too right. I couldn't agree with you more. I really couldn't. So just then, can you sort of take us? You've sort of mentioned it a little bit with some of the feedback you're getting from your from the people you're working with, the people on your courses.
Yeah.
But how then do you as an entrepreneur sort of place this kind of global mission, which is obviously something that's far bigger than yourself?
Yeah.
But how do you place that within sort of the context of what you do? Because it's not something you just wake up one morning and think, I know what I'm going to do. No. Here we go.
No, there's our course and our business, we specifically focus on marketing funnel builders, right? And there's a variety of reasons for that. First of all, I was a funnel builder, or am a funnel builder, and so I understood kind of on a very micro, hyper specific scale the problems that they encountered. What's fascinating to me is that if you look at some of the top performing courses and courses that people have thought this is genuinely game changing, you've got Dave Foy's course for No Fear Funnels, you've got a lot of the guys at Digital Marketer through like Ryan Dice and Russ Henneberry, you've got Troy Dean's course at WP Elevation, you know, Lee Jackson, of course, with his stuff. What's interesting, like Agency Trailblazer, is people will take the lessons that they've learned in that process and think, actually, this is applicable to accountants, architects, it's applicable to marketing businesses, it's applicable to sports coaches, it's applicable to, you know, billion-dollar construction firms. The goal eventually is for kind of this message to become so widespread that everyone in the world accepts it, but I understood that the way that you do that is by testing on a very, very specific market. So we teach a lot of these processes, you know, basic sales techniques down to quite advanced closing techniques and how to price your marketing funnel services. How do you justify $25,000 for a single project? How do you justify $25,000 for a single day rate? To be able to do all of that stuff for one business means that we can make it work for other businesses. So that's kind of how Sell Your Service operates, is by specifically working with marketing businesses to help them attract and close 5- and 6-figure deals. Because I kind of figured, well, if I get enough experience in that area, maybe I can start pushing this out to some wider audiences as well. Have you read Seth Godin's book, This Is Marketing?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
So one of the biggest and one of the best metaphors that Seth uses is that dye pack that's in money. Like if you steal money from a bank and if you open it up, it explodes this purple dye all over you, and if you get it on you, it's impossible to wash off. If you dropped that dye into a swimming pool, it would turn the whole swimming pool purple. But if you drop that dye, this incredibly powerful dye, into the ocean, it doesn't make a difference because it's just too big. So we decided to become really focused on some of these principles and lessons in order for us to be able to, you know, widen it out at a later date.
That's great. That's great. So, I mean, mate, really, I'll be on you in a couple of months to see how you're going with this. I'm a beggar like that.
Yeah,
you set a challenge for me, I'll be on it.
Yeah, yeah.
I was going to say it sounds like a one man crusade, but that's not quite it.
I think it's closer to a tinfoil hat wearing crusade at the moment. But what's funny is we do have, you know, we've already got, I don't know, 7 or 8 schools kind of across the area built up. We're building a school education program that schools will be able to buy independently. What's really funny is in the UK, the UK government has just said that they want to start expanding the curriculum outside of classic STEM and academia routes. And I think they are beginning to cotton on to this. But my big kind of push that I want to show is, in the UK and in Western countries, we're very lucky to be able to have access to this way of thinking. We take for granted that we can say, actually, maybe I want to change the way that I think about money. Maybe I want to change the way that I perceive pricing. A lot of countries, it's so ingrained through family values and through very kind of old traditional methods of teaching. And a lot of people basically don't have an education past the age of maybe 8 if they get into education at all. But to then give them countries like, you know, Sudan and the Congo and India, you know, these countries kind of access to that same level of sales education, that to me is going to be really exciting. And hopefully a lot of those countries are going to be able to, you know, sell their services. They've got some incredibly bright, talented, hardworking individuals. I mean, my VA is comfortably smarter than I am. She knows more about the business than I do. And I think it'd be a great opportunity to let some of those countries sell in a way that is more... Because we've all seen those spam emails come through, right? Like, we do development with PHP, and I'm like, the weird thing is actually you probably have got a really good service and you've probably got really talented guys, but you're selling it wrong. The problem is not with your product, it's with your sales process. So let's change that first.
So this, of course, dovetails very nicely into what a funnel actually is and how it works. I see what you did there.
Very good.
A lot of the guys that listen to this podcast, they are marketing consultants. Mm-hmm. They are marketing professionals employed in positions. Some may be deciding to take the leap. Mm. And they will hear the words marketing funnel bandied about quite a lot. And from my perception of it is that there's quite a big misunderstanding that a funnel is simply a visual graphic that says you have lots of, you put lots of potential customers or potential leads in at the top and you get paying customers out the bottom and hey, look, it makes a V shape. Yeah. You can see why it's called a funnel.
Yeah.
It's so much more than that representation though.
Yeah. Do you know, it's interesting because I've already started seeing like, adverts saying that the funnel is dead. The next big thing is the flywheel. And I think the big thing that people miss is it's got nothing to do at all with the tools and the technology and the systems and processes that you use. It's understanding that on one half of like your business, at the beginning of your business, you have a load of people who have no idea that you exist. And this is for our businesses, it's for our customers, you know, whichever way you want to slice that. You have a load of people that have no idea that you exist. And your job is to basically pull them through so they become happy, profitable, repeat customers that refer you to their friends. Those are the 4 metrics of a successful kind of conversion. Mm-hmm. And companies like Lead Pages and ClickFunnels and Unbounce and whatever, they'll say, you need to use our software to be able to do this. And actually, the truth is that I know people who are doing crazy figures with just like a standard blog post, you know, like no design, just blog content. Mm. I know people who are just doing it with email. There's a mixture of ways of getting people through that process. And there are stages and we can get into that, you know, because I think it's a fantastic service to sell to your customers. But it's also a really good way of getting customers in. You're right. It is more than kind of this V-shaped graphic that we see, and we have 100 people at the top and then 50 people in the middle and then 10 people come out, and you go, yeah, well, I understand the maths, but what is the actual journey? And I think people confuse the processes and the tools for the journey for understanding, well, actually, first of all, if people don't know who I am, I need to find them or they need to be able to find me. and then they need to become a subscriber. They need to like me and understand who I am. And then they need to become a lead. They need to demonstrate some kind of interest in my product or service. And then I need to serve them. I need to say, hey, I can help you. If you give me something in exchange, I can give you that. And that's the sale and the close. And then we further develop a relationship with them. It's not so much about the tools as it is about that journey of, you know, getting someone to go on a date with you or getting someone to marry you.
That's a good sort of analogy. I was watching a video that Dave Foy put together a yep. few weeks ago, and he used the same, you know, if this yeah. was a date, we haven't even got in the car yet. You know, but there was two things I was going to say. The first is that also there's kind of the misconception that the funnel ends when somebody buys something from you.
So true.
That's kind of the end of the beginning.
Yep.
But it sounds like a Red Dwarf episode.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's kind of the end of the beginning, and then there's so much more that then comes after that. Once you've got the thing about it is if you can figure out a way to engage with your customers on a level that's more than you just working for them.
Yeah.
Then actually you have these conversations and these opportunities that are so deep-seated because the other side of this conversation is already invested in you. They've already paid for you to do whatever it is.
Yep.
You need to give them a good service. You need to over-service. You need to delight. You need to do all that. But you've got to do that anyway.
Yeah.
You know, the second thing I was going to say is that one of the misconceptions people have with marketing funnels is that they can kind of set it and forget it.
And, sure.
And yeah, there you go. Yeah. There's the nervous laughter. And the thing that people maybe don't realize is that, you know, you put this, you're putting a funnel in inverted commas in place because it is your responsibility to guide people from their first contact with you right through the funnel to the point where they're ready to make a sale and then ultimately become an advocate. The thing is, the natural process of the funnel is that people will fall off, and that's what it's there for. It's there to distill just Joe Public into this is my target audience, and I can really help you out. I don't really know where I'm going with this.
That's good. So you're absolutely right. The first misconception is that the funnel ends with the start of the customer sale. What I want to say to that is, I actually think it's completely the wrong way around, and I completely agree with you. People have got it the wrong. People have made the misconception. Instead, this is the kind of stuff that I'm talking about. The amount of times that I've gone into, and I'm talking big businesses. I've been very, very privileged to work with, you know, huge telco companies, gas and electric companies, oil companies, and they all say to me pretty much the same thing at the start. They go, Mike, we need more traffic. We need more traffic, and we need more email subscribers. And I'll go, okay, when was the last time you sent a sales email? And it's tumbleweeds. No one in the marketing department or the sales department has ever sent a sales email to their current list. I'm like, you're not even serving, and not selling, serving your current customer database. What gives you the right to go out and attract more audience members if you're not willing to make the best possible relationship you can with people exactly as you've put it, Pete? You've already worked with them. You've already bought to them. You know, you've paid for the cost of acquisition. Mm. So why would we invest money at the traffic stage when we know people are going to drop off? We know people are going to drop off at the subscriber stage and the lead stage. Let's work really heavily on our sales process and understand more about the relationship and the customers that we've got. And we've literally turned businesses. I think my biggest success was, and I like to sort of write about this in some of my blog posts and a testimonial. We had a customer who pretty much all we did was just remarket using some Google ads and some Facebook ads to their current email list. And they had an email list of like 100,000 people or whatever. Mm. And they actually had to say, we need you to stop the campaign because we're getting too many sales calls come in. Like, our sales guys can't handle the volume coming in, which obviously made me feel very, very good because I was like, right, well, it works. But it was so cheap in comparison. I mean, we're talking like pennies on the dollar for ad expense to advertise to their current customers. So you're right, it doesn't end. If anything, it begins. And if as marketing consultants, we want to go into, you know, our customers, the first marketing campaign you need to build is to their current customer database, because that's where the money is. That's the easiest sell. And the second piece you were talking about, again, I completely agree. It's interesting that kind of we sometimes overcomplicate for the sake of overcomplicating, I think, because we want to seem maybe a bit clever, you know? Mm. So it's funny to me that there are these misconceptions, particularly around funnels. But the first one to me is really, really important. You know, start with your current customers. Start with who they are.
And, you know, I think I often get strange looks when we walk into a new client and we're having like we run digital marketing retainers for some of our clients, and we walk in and I sit down and I say, okay, tell me about your business. What was your turnover last year?
Yeah.
And they look at you across the table as in, well, that's none of your business.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, look, if you're not going to tell me that, this is going to be a really awkward 45 minutes.
Yeah.
But it is, as if you're a marketing consultant that's in there, they're asking you to do something. It is your job. It is your responsibility to ask the probing questions.
Yep.
Because if you're just, we go through this whole exercise where we map out what growth could look like. Mm-hmm. And I may have used the example before. I was having this meeting with a client who they sold playground equipment. This sort of, it was all in honeycomb shape. So you could buy these kits and it would all sort of fit together.
Yeah.
And we're talking like the big playground equipment that councils may buy for parks or schools may buy or nurseries, that kind of thing. And this guy sat in front of me and was very enthusiastic about telling me that he'd spent £100,000 on these molds that he'd brought in from Taiwan, but now he had the facility to manufacture the stuff in the UK. And I said to him, so how quickly can you turn it around? They weren't holding stock, they were making these things to order. And I said, how quickly can you turn it around? Oh, well, each one, we can have it delivered in 2 weeks. It takes like 8 days manufacturing. Mm. So I turn around and say, well, you can't do more than 3 a month then.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's irrelevant how much traffic I send your way, because all you're going to do is you'll get one happy customer and then however many unhappy customers
absolutely.
For the rest of the month. And he really didn't get that.
No, and they don't get it. And so apologies, Pete, I'm going to have a quick plug of my book here.
Go for it.
In the book that I wrote, From Single to Scale, it talks about these three problems as like the problem towards scale. And again, so many businesses, particularly marketing consultants, we think that, okay, well, I want to earn, let's say in the UK, I want to earn £40,000 a year as a marketing consultant. So that means through the business, I probably need to bring between £60,000 and £80,000 through, something like that. The problem is not the amount that you can charge, the amount of potential customers out there. The reality is you can physically only do so much work per day. Whether you like it or not, even if you work properly 8 hours every single day, you actually physically can't keep that up. I can barely do, you know, 8 hours a day for one day in a row. It's knackering. It's like, I wouldn't know what it's like to have a hard day's work. But if you include, you know, driving, meeting, consultation calls, discovery calls, lead generation, all of this stuff, we only really get about 2 hours to do any work a day. The rest of it is taken up with a huge amount of admin. So therefore, the problem is not, well, can I find more customers, particularly for us as consultants and individual businesses? The problem is usually, can I scale the process? Is the process repeatable? And can I get someone else to do it? Can someone else take care of that side of the manufacturing? And with your customer, you're absolutely right. It doesn't matter how much money I put into the process. You are physically going to experience a bottleneck. And we see that all too often. Again, that's the problem. It's not a marketing problem. It's usually a process problem. We see that so often.
That's a great way of putting it. It's not a marketing problem. It's often a process problem. I really like that one. There's a nugget that's going to go into the... Yeah, that's a nugget that's going to go into the show notes for sure.
Good, I'm glad.
So you run courses on this. I guess that you probably come across people quite regularly that aren't really aware that they can actually sell funnels, that can be a service that they can offer to their clients.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's a very lucrative service. Most people are looking for some kind of, it goes back to your set and forget, where I had the nervous laughter. So the problem with, I didn't really expand on the set and forget side. The problem with set and forget is, yes, I can set and forget my garden, but if I come back to it in a year's time, it's going to be a mess.
Yeah. Right?
So the set and forget model, in a bizarre way, it actually does exist. It is out there. I just know that if I leave my products out there and to churn automatically, the results are not going to be as curated and as beautiful as they perhaps could be. I need to continually work at that. Of course you do. So when we look at like our business and we say, well, I want more recurring income and I want more passive income, I think a lot of people, what they really want is more scalable income, which is why, you know, courses, books, these kinds of things, there's no such thing as passive. If it is passive, it's usually very ugly, it's quite slow, it doesn't really exist. Scalable income, in my opinion, is much, much more believable and approachable. The way that we can actually create scalable income for ourselves is by creating marketing funnels for other businesses. The best example I have is for ourselves, when we first started getting into this, when our kind of our funnel business really took off, like I think I mentioned at the start, we started installing opt-in forms on blog posts. And what I did was I wrote up the documentation and the process for doing this. I bought Opt-in Monster. I said, we only do it on these types of businesses. We only do it on WordPress sites. They have to provide us this, that, and the other. I basically wrote up what I would do. So I created a fake project and I wrote up every single step. I documented it. I use a program called Quip, Q-U-I-P, which I believe is owned by Salesforce now, but very good for documentation. And my job then allowed me to sell that to customers and say, hey, I want to turn your traffic into email subscribers. They go, fantastic. Okay, would love to do that. I go, great. I would then hire somebody else to do that for me because I've got the documentation. They're going to do the exact same job that anyone else is going to do. They might even add a few things that I hadn't thought of, which was often the case, I found. That allows me to sell that much more scalably than selling it and then me doing it. And this goes the same for writing reports, creating products, developing services, delivering products and services to customers. Marketing funnels are a fantastic way of being able to scalably grow your income because there's so many things that are essentially a series of checklists that you can deliver to your customers. And another one was like, kind of it specifically worked around online courses and we became very specific around, well, that's the audience that we want to go after. So bizarrely, by niching down and by going after a very particular market, we actually scaled our business further. Because those customers that we worked with, they then said, okay, well, what's the next stage? Can you do something else with us? And that again allows us to kind of develop and grow a team. And we were scalably growing our income as opposed to just trading time for money.
That's the key thing there, trading time for money. And it's so easy if you're in a job that you're wanting to get out of and you're thinking of taking the leap to go self-employed to say, right, well, I want to earn this much money. That means the company needs to earn that this much money, exactly what you're saying earlier. So therefore, I'm going to divide that by 12 and that's how much I need to do every month. So that's how much I need every week. That's how much I need every day. And that's what I'm worth.
Yep.
Whereas actually the thing with... It's weird, isn't it? Because you get to a tipping point. We've all been down that route. That's the first thing.
Sure, of course it is. Yeah, yeah.
You know, the first time I set up a freelance company, I was working every hour God sent, still doing the day job.
Yeah, yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I had enough runway of work that I could say, right, the day job's going.
Yeah.
But it was based on exactly that model. Sorry, go on.
No, I was going to say, and it's not uncommon, and already. Like if people are in jobs, you know, already, and you're not looking to kind of make the jump just yet, I think a lot of people say that you should look towards passive income. A lot of the gurus and marketing experts and whatever, and not that kind of stuff. Although no one calls himself a guru, I've noticed. I think we're all anti-gurus, but I've never actually met anyone who calls himself a guru. So all the marketing experts and the business experts, they say, oh, you should create courses, you should create passive income, all this kind of stuff. In my opinion, if you are currently working a job, the fastest way for you to A, move out of it, and B, start creating some scalable income is write up the process. Write up the documentation for what you would be selling, because it's far faster and easier and cheaper, frankly, to sell something and then get someone else to deliver it. That's the fastest way out of it.
Yeah, I fully agree. The second thing I was going to say after where I was going was that you then get to a tipping point after we've all been through that rite of passage.
Yep.
You then get to a tipping point where you realize that if I can demonstrate worth to my clients, then actually the amount of work I do, the number of hours, is kind of irrelevant.
Yes,
it's all about the worth that not how valuable I am, you know, how great am I, but how valuable the work is that I have done for you, and these are the results.
Yeah.
And that's where when you start working on systemized processes like funnels, like the way we set up our marketing retainers. It is about, this is the worth to your business. And that's why we start by asking the awkward questions about what's your profit, what's your turnover, what's your process, where would you like to be, what's your average customer value, et cetera, et cetera. And by, you know, you can then start to affect an entire business just by just by that mental shift of not trading time for money, but demonstrating worth. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. You're completely right. And I even think that people undervalue businesses wanting to have, you know, someone else around them. Like, if you're a good person, people get on with you, you know, you've got a decent sense of humor, you don't get stressed out too easily, you're calm, you're knowledgeable, you're just a good person that people want to be around, companies will pay for that. Like, it doesn't even, I think a lot of the time we say, oh, well, it has to be results focused, because we're very scared of either being seen as a con artist or seen as kind of an imposter. So we think, oh, well, people are paying for the results. You're absolutely right. People are, and people ultimately want to have results. But all things being equal, people want to work with their friends. They'd rather work with their friends. If you got someone 80% of the results and you were a friend and you listened to them and, you know, they were happy to go to lunch with you, that kind of stuff, compared to someone who got 90% of the results but they didn't want to hang out with you, I can assure you they'd rather work with the friend, like the human being. They think, actually, I want to call Mike up. I want to call Pete up. I want to have a conversation. I'm glad when they stop by the office because we can have a talk. You know, there's a massive amount of value in that. And because, and this goes right back to our earlier conversation about education, we are taught to value tasks. We're taught to value productivity and being a factory worker. So this is right from the get-go, right from year dot, from zero, we're saying everything you do is measurable and is quantitative. And if you can't prove the formula that shows that you're a worthwhile human being, therefore people won't want to hang out with you. And it is categorically, can I say bollocks on this?
Well, you just have.
Okay, good. Unless you want to edit that out. It's bollocks, because it's absolute nonsense that people only hire based on results. People hire and spend money on their friends. And if you're a good person who, you know, listens to your customer, and you said it earlier, when you ask those awkward questions, you're challenging like their perception of their business, you're challenging themselves. They want that. Their marketing professionals in the past haven't asked those kinds of questions, right? Yeah. All of a sudden, you're super valuable, and all you've done is ask three questions, because people think, I want to be around this person more because they make me feel smarter. There's a huge amount of value in that, and that's where the big bucks can be made.
Absolutely, absolutely. Fantastic, mate. Well, look, we've naturally kind of pulled it
full
circle,
which is
great. I really appreciate your time, and I'd love to have you back on the show again, because there's other stuff that we haven't covered.
I'd love to come back on. No, this was good. I really appreciate talking to you. Thanks for having me on, Pete.
So if people want to find you, what's the best place to get hold of you?
Yeah, the best place is actually probably our YouTube channel. That's our biggest community, is if you search for Sell Your Service. I think it's like youtube.com/sellyourserviceuk or something. But we're also on Facebook at Sell Your Service, and I'm on Twitter at Mike_Killen, and that's where a huge amount of my content goes out. But if people head to also sellyourservice.co.uk, that's where the site is, and the blog, and all the free resources. So yeah, appreciate it.
I'll make sure that there's links to all of that kind of stuff in the show notes
as
well. And yeah, mate, again, thank you so much. And I'm really looking forward to meeting you
next
time.
Yeah, I'll see you in a few weeks, eh?
We will indeed. We'll have a pint.
Yeah, that sounds good. All right, thanks for having me on, mate.
Cheers, mate. Have a good one.
Cheers.
I really hope you're inspired after that episode. Thanks, Mike, so much for your time. Your insight was brilliant, and there was so much that everybody could action from that episode. Show notes can be found at peteeverett.com/044. And we'd love to see you in our Facebook group. So head on over to peteeverett.com/group, or just search Facebook for the Marketing Development Podcast, and we'd love to see you there.